The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Yeah, good afternoon on this Friday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Got it very dark all of a sudden there around 2:30. I was listening to something or reading something. Then I looked up and it was like it was midnight. Anyway, I hope it's better wherever you are around the country. Today on the show, we're looking at the new Frozen. Yes, we are.
Don't let them in, don't let them see. Be the good girl you always have to be. Conceal, don't feel, don't let them know. Well, now they know. Let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go, let it go. Turn away.
Of course, that's from the first Frozen, Let It Go. The biggest grossing animation movie ever made. It broke all sorts of records. So it's a difficult job to follow that one, isn't it? But Frozen 2 is in cinemas today, and Trina McCarthy and her two little children, Maxie and Minnie, are coming in to talk us through that because they've seen it already. They got a preview. And Michael Murphy, broadcaster, writer, poet, psychoanalyst, dream analyzer, he's going to talk us through the soundtrack to his life today, so I'm really looking forward to that. And we have live music from Sive. Just hello to everybody in the Mead Street Youth Activity Centre. I was along there last night in Mead Street Church to help them with the Youth Achievement Awards and Community Awards for 2019. And it was a lovely evening. It was a lovely evening in the church, and everybody turned out in their finery. And loads of people got awards for sport, for their achievements in school, for community work, personal achievement. And then there was people who've been working in the community there around Mead Street for well, more years than they care to remember. And I'm talking about Philippo and Elizabeth and Fran and James, and they got awards as well. And it was all organised by Sarah and Fran and other people there, and well done to everybody. And it was a real pleasure and a privilege to be invited to be part of the evening. We've been talking about calendars all this week. And I said yesterday, with my tongue in my cheek and half joke and whole in earnest, that maybe there should be Calendar of the Year awards, because we had the book awards the other night and we've been getting them in. Fast and Furious. Well, I have two in front of me. We've got one from Caracalla Hospital and Hospice Care, and that's down in Ennis in County Clare. And it'll cost you €5. And if you're in the area, it's a lovely calendar because the pictures of beautiful pictures of areas around Ennis. There's Fenor Beach at sunset. And there's Cascades in Ennis-Dymond. And we stayed in the Falls Hotel years ago, and there's a beautiful view out the window of the first floor room, and you can see these lovely falls from Ennis-Dymond, and it's beautifully captured there. And then there's Surfers on Lahinch Beach, and on it goes. So that's there, that's there. And this is the cutest one. If there's an award for cutest calendar, cutest charity calendar, it's the Dogs for the Disabled 2020. And on the cover, you have 5 golden retriever pups. And I dare you not to say, oh, if you saw this photograph. We'll actually put it up. We'll put it up on the blog there so you can see it. And they do amazing work. And all the pictures are of puppies. And they're all awe. One has an awe factor more than the next. And that's lovely as well. And that's for Dogs for the Disabled. And I'm sure if you go onto the website, you'll be able to purchase that if you are a dog lover. So thanks for that. And keep them coming in. And maybe this time next year, or maybe before the end of our run this year, we might have a Calendar of the Year awards ceremony. We were talking yesterday about writing letters. And Lorna Brennan from Carla Goodon says, I heard you talking today about the joy of receiving handwritten letters and how it's a pity that it's almost a lost art. I rang my elderly aunt in Guernsey 2 weeks ago, but she wasn't able to take my call at the time. This morning, I received a lovely handwritten letter from her apologising that she wasn't able to take the call and filling me in on all the family news. It was so lovely to get it, and it was a pleasure reading her letter. So hi to Aunt Maura Hearn in Guernsey. That's from Lorna Brennan in Carlow. And yesterday we were talking to Ray and Alison, and one of the Ray O'Neill, who's a psychoanalyst, and Alison Keating, who's a psychologist, and they come in every so often and give advice on relationship woes. And yesterday we read out an email from a lady who was worried about her husband's drinking. And on foot of that, we got an email And it says, hi Ray, I live in America and I've been here for 30 years plus. Originally from Dublin, I grew up in an alcoholic family. And eventually at the age of 36, I started drinking, late starter. And I quit at 46. When I decided to quit, I had no idea I could not do it alone. It was only then that I realised I was an alcoholic. We alcoholics tend to think we are a unique lot with problems nobody else could imagine. But we are not unique or different from any other person. It is just that we drink over everything. I drank when I was happy, I drank when I was sad, and for everything else in between. When I realised I had the disease of alcoholism, I began to heal from the inside out. Alone, I could accomplish nothing. I had tried for a long time to quit, but to no avail. As a child, my dream was hardly to become an alcoholic, was it? But that's what happened. And walking into the rooms of AA was the biggest, stroke, scariest thing I've ever done in my life, admitting my defeat. Being Irish and a woman, I was beyond stubborn. I had to surrender, however cliché that sounds, to something bigger than me. That was almost 8 years ago. Maybe being in America, it's not so unusual to talk about our failures and successes, but in Ireland, it might be different, less acceptable. My life is very different these days, fully alive to all it has to offer. When I go home to Ireland, it's easy now. I'm a lovely person to be around and enjoy any situation life puts in front of me. When I heard the show yesterday about binge drinking, I had to jump in and say, it's just another word for alcoholism. It's softer, more pliable, but the results are just as disastrous. Alcohol destroys families, kills the human spirit and wrecks lives of everyone around the alcoholic. Children stuck in the crossfire at Christmas will be praying for one thing and one thing only, peace. I know as a child I did, but it didn't happen until I was 46. I still get some funny looks when I order a soft drink and then someone says, can't you drink just a little bit? I smile and I ask the bartender for a splash of lime. Thanks for bringing the subject into the open. And it is that thing, when you hear it said that when you give up cigarettes, you're a great person and everyone's patting you on the back. And when you say you've given up drink, you have to explain yourself. Now, doesn't that say it all? Doesn't that say it all about our attitude to drink? Anyway, that's that. On the cover of the Times today and in a lot of the papers, stats about how inactive our young people are. More than 60% of boys and over 80% of girls in Ireland do not get enough daily physical activity. The recommended daily activity, according to the WHO, is 1 hour a day. And most of our young people are falling short. Why is that? Why is that? Well, there's a number of reasons, but I'd say the biggest reason of all is technology. Because we give out about the various problems with technology, and what we don't talk about enough is what you could be doing when you're on technology. You could be out there running around playing sports. And the worrying thing in that statistic as well, and we've talked about it before, we must revisit it soon, is the fact that girls, when they hit a certain age, 12, 13, they turn their backs on sport. And there's loads of reasons for that. Of course, they become aware of their bodies, then there's communal showers, hair, makeup, all those sort of things. And we have to do something about that as a country. We must revisit that. We've talked about it a lot over the past. So we must get, I think we'll get your man Moyne in, Dr. Moyne from Operation Transformation. We'll talk about that sometime next week. Fascinating statistics about a new communication centre for Transport Infrastructure Ireland. It's called the Motorway Control Centre. I love this sort of thing. So they have a camera to cover every inch of the M50. And they have this huge wall, 15 metres wide, 4.2 million pixel screen, and they can look at everything that's going on the M50. So if you're on the M50 at the moment, there is somebody watching you in the National Motorway Control Centre. So don't pick your nose. Don't pick your nose and don't scratch your bum, because they can see everything. They can see everything. The control centre based in Dublin's Docklands is set to be fully operational next year following a €60 million upgrade. And they are the people who feed the information into those signs. You know, when you're driving along the M50 or any other congested road and you see 15 minutes to Junction 3 Sandyford or Junction 13 Sandyford, well, they get all that information. They can tell you if there's water, if it's slippy because of ice or whatever. And they also have the stats around the number of cars that travel the M50, our busiest road in the country every day. Averages out 145,000 cars, vans, trucks, minibuses, big buses a day. That's the average. And last year, in May, it hit a peak of 178,770 vehicles, and they reckon that the figures for 2019 are going to show further increases. So if you're out there and it's Friday evening traffic and you're sitting there, well, at least you have the stats now. So when you get to where you're going half an hour late, you can say, I was one of 145,000 cars that was on the M50 today. Yeah. Just before we go to a song, we've a very interesting lineup tomorrow on the TV show. People you'll definitely want to see. Holt McCallany, he plays Bill Tench in Mindhunters. And Mindhunters is on Netflix, and it's one of those shows that everybody's talking about. It's in season two, and he plays this guy called Bill Tench, and he's an FBI sort of guy, and they go around and they try and profile serial killers. And it's based on real life stories. A guy called Douglas, an FBI agent, wrote a book, and the series is based on that. Anyway, Holt McCallany, he was in Alien 3, he was in Fight Club. He has strong Irish connections, and he's coming in to talk to us tomorrow night. We have Gwyneth Paltrow's intimacy coach. Yes, you know Gwyneth Paltrow, who did Conscious Uncoupling. Well, Michaela Boehm is the lady who gives her advice on relationships. So she's coming in. We've Emma DeBeery, who has written a brilliant book called Don't Touch My Hair. Mary Kennedy will be talking to us about retirement. And I'm really looking forward to meeting this guy. There's a guy called Red Pepper, not his real name, but he is one of the top voiceover artists in the world. So when you were looking at the promo, the trailer for, say, Armageddon or Independence Day, it was his voice. In a world where man is nearly extinct. That sort of thing. So he's coming in. We're going to have a bit of fun with him. That's tomorrow night on the telly. Now, 5 on 5, 5 on. What will Frozen 3 be called? Defrosted, maybe, is that person. And it's amazing how friends can treat you with suspicion when you say you just want a soft drink in a bar. Well, we have to get over that, don't we? And most people drink to relax and socialise and do just fine, says Emmett. Two sides to every story, Emmett. 5 on 5, 5 on, ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. Michael Kiwanuka. It could be Kiwanuka. That's it. Michael Kiwanuka. That's lovely. Cold Little Heart. On RT Radio 1, 5 on 5, 5 on, ray@rte.ie. Ray, parents are to blame. Putting little Johnny into the car and driving him to school. He should be walking to school and running home. Mollycoddle, says Niall. It's not always possible to let Johnny walk to school. Today's generation are totally detached from nature and the great outdoors and all the great exercise that goes with it. Somebody else. And your core strength must be way better than mine if you can manage to scratch your bum whilst on the M50, says Claire. Yeah, anyway, I've just tried it, Claire, and I can, yes. Great calendar to be had in Rome. Good looking priests, it's called. I kid you not. And they were, says Mary. Good looking, that is. That's Mary and Clane. Well, a member of our crew bought that very calendar when they were in Rome and brought it back and derived great hilarity out of it for the drive time team. That's the story. I forgot to mention one more thing. Just on December the 7th, it's the last show of this year on the telly. And we did it last year, maybe a bit the year before, but we're putting together surprises for people. So if there's somebody in your life that you want to surprise, somebody you want to say thank you to, for example, or if there's somebody who wanted to get a particular toy or present from Santa years ago and didn't manage to get it and were disappointed and you want to, all these years later, to surprise them with that very present, that's a possibility. If you want to bring somebody home from America or Australia or Canada, we might possibly do that as well. So it's just something like, you get the idea. And that's just three possibilities. You might dream up something else. And if you have somebody that you want to surprise on that night, raisechristmascrackers@rte.ie. That's raisechristmascrackers@rte.ie. And the Ray Darcy Show elves will be working away on that over the next couple of weeks. And we could be surprising your mother, father, sister, brother, daughter, son, cousin, whatever, on that night. So raisechristmascrackers@rte.ie. Great news about the M50. I hope they use this technology to prosecute the morons that are driving at excessive speeds, continuously lane jumping and crossing three lanes of traffic to exit the motorway dangerously. Well, in that article, which I didn't mention, but it is, they have registration plate recognition technology. So they will be able to spot the people who are breaking the law and follow up on that. I was channel hopping on TV last night and came upon the tail end of a Conservative Party political broadcast on BBC. And the announcer said all party political broadcasts are now available on the BBC iPlayer. Just how empty and tedious would your life have to be to need to access that? Asked Frank Inkledare. Then what I'm going to do now, I'm going to look at a party political broadcast on behalf of the Labour Party. That did it. Hello from Paddy in Leitrim. Hello, Paddy in Leitrim. I'm a non-drinker. I get lots of stick from sad people, mostly when they were drunk, asking me why I didn't take a drink. I think the worm is turning, Paddy. The worm is turning, and people are beginning to reappraise their relationship with drink, and they're beginning to do mindful drinking. And I know that sounds a little bit up its own behind, but it just means that you think about it a little bit more when you're drinking. Why am I doing this? How will I feel in the morning? How does it affect my behaviour? How does it affect the people around me? And all that sort of thing. Great chat for a Friday when people are planning to go to the pub. 5 on 551 Ray at RTE.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or you can text us on this Friday afternoon at 51551. Now, last night in South Carolina, in the United States of America, a young Irish student managed to get a rare interview with former American Vice President Joe Biden. You'll probably know this if you're following American politics. Joe Biden is on the campaign trail and he's currently the front runner in the race to become the Democratic Party's candidate to take on Donald Trump next year. Fergus O'Rourke is the Irish man who chatted to him last night and he's on the line. Afternoon, Fergus. Good morning, good evening, good night, whatever.
Hello, Ray.
How are you?
It's the afternoon. I suppose it's early afternoon here, late morning kind of thing.
Okay.
To say it's an interview... You're generous to call it an interview. I was yeah. I was kind of hustling and I was picking at scraps, you know.
Right.
But yeah, no, I managed to meet the man. That's not just about.
Well, let's get a bit of background first. So you're studying in Alabama. Now, I'm not an expert on American geography, but there's a fair old distance between Alabama and South Carolina.
There is indeed. So I drove 500 miles on Wednesday night to get from Mobile, Alabama, which is on the Gulf Coast, up northeast to Greenwood, South Carolina. And the thing, I have a connection to Greenwood because I studied here for the last 2 years.
Okay.
So I received an email the other day telling me that Joe Biden was coming to town, and I just thought, geez, I can't miss this, you know?
Because
the fact that it is a... Go on.
You're studying journalism. We better get that out there as well.
Well, I'm studying politics and philosophy. I'm kind of faffing around, to be honest with you, but I call myself... A journalist. I might like to be a journalist. I don't know how I'd like to do that. I think I would like to interview people first and foremost,
okay,
as opposed to trying to kind of write things. I like talking to people face-to-face, if that's possible, or over the phone. I just love talking to people.
Okay, so you drove 500 miles to get a face-to-face chat with Joe Biden. So how did that go?
How did the chat go last night?
Yeah.
Well... So it wasn't a chat. He was kind of being mobbed by the crowd, and he was walking through two sides of people, and everyone was trying to get at him, trying to hug him and kiss him and everything. So I shouted, Joe, I said, welcome to Greenwood. I'm Irish. And I must say that Katrina Perry told me to say that I was Irish because that's the connection there. And he claims his Irish heritage and all that kind of thing. And I asked him. I asked him about the peace process in Northern Ireland. He didn't like the fact that I was shoving the phone into his face because I was kind of posing as a supporter when, in reality, I was trying to get at him in a kind of a journalistic capacity. So I was kind of hiding, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And these guys are they're very carefully managed, right? As you can imagine, it's very protective. So. If you have a press pass, you're actually probably less likely to get a chance to talk to him. You're better off acting like a supporter and posing for a selfie or whatever.
Like you did, yes.
I didn't get the selfie. I hate selfies, but that kind of thing. I was one of them, yeah.
No, but you posed as a supporter. Let's hear the little interaction between you and Joe Biden.
Yeah. Vice President, welcome to Greenwood. I'm from Ireland.
Oh, where?
From Dublin. You're from Louth, I believe.
That's right.
Listen. How will you protect the peace process in Ireland, the Good Friday Agreement? I know you care about my country, and I care about yours.
A great deal, boss. And we made it clear to the Brits that we do not, in fact, support breaking down what's happened now. We don't want to guard a border again. We don't want to do it. All we can do is put pressure, and that's the pressure I'm going to keep.
Appreciate it, Vice President. Thank you.
So then he realised you were recording it and was a little bit annoyed.
Basically, yeah. And understandably so. I don't blame him, you know, but I'm definitely glad I did it. And I wouldn't be talking to you if I hadn't.
That's true.
It's all very well to say, oh, I met Joe Biden, but I have it on record now. No, it's just kind of cool, you know.
Now, we better reveal that you're Sean O'Rourke's son.
Yeah, that's worth pointing out. And I actually, as a journalist, I pose as Fergus James Murphy. That's kind of my pen name because I don't want that connection to instantly be made. And my mum's last name is Murphy.
Yes.
And she's a very competent journalist as well. And some would say she's actually a better broadcaster than my dad. Eamon Dunphy told me that, actually, funnily enough. But I must say that I heard someone tell me that a famous writer said, when I was 14, my father was a fool. And when I was 21, I couldn't believe how much he had learned in 7 years. And of course, the point is that your dad didn't learn anything, but you just realise, as you grow older, you realise the wisdom that your father or mother have. Yeah. And that's certainly been the case for me. Like, as I've got older, I've appreciated what they do and admired it in a way that you don't really value that when you're a teenager and you don't get it. But I've just seen what they've been doing, and it's no joke, you know. Like,
no.
it's hard work, and they make me aware of that. Like, they're not telling me, "Oh, good man, just do whatever you want." It's kind of like, if you're going to do this, you'd better bloody do it right.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really glad that they push that, you know.
There's a bit of symmetry which I'd imagine hasn't been lost on you, Fergus, in that you annoyed Joe Biden, who could be a presidential candidate, and your dad back in 2014 when Donald Trump was here as a businessman, not yet a presidential candidate, he annoyed him by quizzing him about his hair.
I know. It's bizarre. It's absolutely mad. I actually remember seeing that magazine thing. It's in the Sunday Independent.
Yes.
Sean O'Rourke is an asshole. I'll never forget it. And it was a Saturday night. We used to go... Me and my mum used to go on a Saturday night to get the papers from a little newsagent in Dunleary, like the next morning's papers, you know?
Yeah.
And then Dad didn't know anything about this. And I remember ringing him and I was kind of laughing about it. But it was quite serious for a short period. It was quite an attack. But in reality, it was only, like, Donald Trump doesn't take anything that he says seriously. He just kind of spouts anything and Dad has kind of made a joke out of it, and
yes, we know that now.
He's seen the light side of it, you know.
Yes,
he's seen the funny aspect.
And of course, it may be a good omen for Joe Biden. He doesn't know this, but so a member of the O'Rourke family upset Donald Trump. He went on to be president, and maybe a second member of the O'Rourke family will upset Joe Biden. Exactly.
I must say I like Joe Biden as a person. He seems like a good guy, but I don't know that he has the energy and the charisma to last the whole campaign. Like, this thing is bruising. And last night, he did fine, but he didn't inspire... I don't think he inspired people. Now, if he can hang on to the name recognition he has and not mess up hugely, maybe he can do it. But I just think you need something special to win this election, and it mightn't be...
Of course, he has.
I don't know. These guys are tough, you know. I don't know. Can he do it?
He has to get the Democratic nomination first. That's the first hurdle he has to get over.
Exactly, and that's no joke as well. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of really strong candidates in there, I hope he can do it. Maybe, but maybe he won't. Who knows?
Now, so we'll be recognising your name in the future. Will you be going as Fergus O'Rourke or Fergus? What's the your pseudonym?
Fergus James Murphy. So
Fergus
if you
James
look me
Murphy.
Up on YouTube.
Okay.
If you go on YouTube or SoundCloud, Fergus James Murphy. I don't know. Right. Let's see. But maybe Murphy though. I kind of like that. It was my granddad's name. Fergus Murphy.
And your mum's name.
And an uncle as well.
Yeah.
And my mum's name, of course.
Great talking to you, Fergus. Mind yourself.
Thanks, Ray. Good luck.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, every Friday, we invite somebody into Studio 10 and ask them to guide us through the soundtrack to their lives. And today is the turn of Michael Murphy, psychoanalyst, author, former RTE newsreader and dream analyzer. That's, have we got everything there?
I think that's a great
introduction. And poet. And
poet. Poet. Thank you.
And husband to Terry.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming in.
I'm delighted to be here, Ray.
I was just thinking there as I said it, the dream analysis, we might throw it out there if we get a couple in before the end.
Sure, I'd be delighted if I can help.
Maybe. If you had a dream last night or during the week and you're perplexed by it, Michael might do the honours of analysing it for you before the end of the programme today. 5 on 551 RTE.ie. So, you were born to Thomas and Susan in Castlebar in 1947.
That's it.
Home birth. Before it was called a home birth.
In the big bed at home, Three the Green Castlebar on the Mall there. Yes, indeed.
Did you talk to your folks about that?
I did indeed. It was just after midday. My father was working. He was a pharmacist and he worked in the main street. And he got a phone call to say that I had arrived at about 12:05. And that I had a big head just like the Murphys, which is a fairly ambiguous thing to say. But that's where I first saw
that's how
the light of day.
Into the world.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
One of the big-headed Murphys. Yeah. I can't imagine there were many phones in Castlebar in 1947.
No, there was one. I think ours was Castlebar 92. If
right.
I remember right.
Yeah. So, not mad. Yeah. And what did your mum do?
Yeah, my mum was a teacher. She was a music teacher first, and then she went on and opened the first wool shop on the other side of the Shannon. She ran a wool shop. It was the Wool Boutique. A lot of the country people refer to it as the Wool Boutique there on the Mall, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So she sold wool and sweaters and all of that sort of thing when I was growing up.
And where were you in the family?
I was the eldest, which sets you up in a certain way. You have to look after the others.
And how many did you have to look after?
There were five boys in that family.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'd say it was tough on Mum looking back, you know.
And just because I'm fascinated by, you know, the dynamics of families.
Yes.
And the eldest, because in our family, the eldest was sort of near, like quite relaxed.
Yeah.
But in a lot of families, the eldest is nearly like the health and safety officer. Which were you?
I would say they'd probably say health and safety.
I think they would.
You know, I wasn't too harsh.
But I think that's dictated by the parents because you know it's the first child.
Yes,
and that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah,
and they desperately want to keep this person safe.
Yes. And but also to set up a good example for the others coming along behind.
Yeah,
you know, so. That's the position I was in. That was the role I had, essentially, I think, yeah.
And did you live over the pharmacy or...?
Oh, no. My father worked in the pharmacy, was in the main street. So we had a house. There's a huge green in the centre of Castlebar called the Mall. It was actually Lord Lucan's cricket pitch. So that was our front garden. We played on that in the summers and, you know.
Yeah.
With all the various dogs from the neighbourhood. I never had a dog as a kid, but we had Tatters Chambers across in the courthouse and Lassie Mellet down with petrol pumps further down. So there were all these dogs. So we had great fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So running around the green, your short trousers.
Yes, yeah. Indeed, yeah.
What is your first memory? It doesn't have to be a sound now. What?
First memory, I was in a high chair and my grandfather came in with some grapes. I had never seen grapes before, and he fed me some grapes from his greenhouse. So I would have had to be two, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the first memory. I remember that very vividly for some reason.
Yeah. And we some lovely sound clips here. You mentioned your mum was a music teacher, so we'll get to this one first and play this in, and you can tell us the significance of it after we play it. So that's the 12th Street Rag from Winifred
Dashwell. That's right. Yeah. We had a very, very large kitchen, and at the end of the kitchen was a piano. So it was in constant use. My mother would play constantly. She was a wonderful pianist. So that's one of the sounds I remember, 12th Street Rag from Winifred Attwell. Winifred Attwell had a show on Radio Luxembourg. And at 7 o'clock, there was Dan Dare, Pilot of the Future. I must have been between 5 and 6, and I used to listen to this religiously. It was a 15-minute show, and after that, Winifred Attwell would come on and play. So I learned all of the music that she played, and my mum played as well. So that's the soundtrack that brings me right back to Castlebar.
And that's wonderfully upbeat, that is, isn't it?
No, it is, yeah. Well, she played stride piano. She was a great pianist.
Stride piano is...
It's the bass. It's a very jumpy bass, okay, which you can hear
in that. Yeah.
So that's the sort of music she played.
She was a Trinidadian pianist.
Yes, that's right.
She enjoyed
right.
great popularity in Britain and Australia from the 1950s with a series of boogie-woogie and ragtime hits selling over 20 million records.
Yeah.
And she was the first black person to have a number one hit in the UK singles chart.
My goodness, that's it. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Dan Dare, Pilot of the future.
Future.
Yes, so I'm going to cue it in. Here we go. Spaceships Away! It was a radio drama, wasn't it?
It was a radio drama about this spaceship and this pilot, and he was a real hero of mine. It was really idealism, really. That's what I was listening to on the radio as a kid. I was fascinated by this, yeah.
And it was serialised, so it was... Join us next time.
Yeah, the Folly or Uppers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the Folly or Uppers.
Yeah, yeah.
To be continued.
To be continued, yeah.
Yeah, because, you see, when I arrived at Radio Luxembourg, it was a pop music station.
Yeah.
So I didn't realise it had this former life.
Oh, it did, yeah. It was a really interesting radio station. Obviously, the pop, they did the top 20 as well at about 11 o'clock at night, I think, on a Sunday night. And we really listened to Radio Luxembourg.
And radio is a huge part of your life. And you include a couple of poems in your new compilation.
Yeah.
Do you call it a compilation? Anthology?
It's collected poems. The Ministry of Dreams.
Yeah, The Ministry of Dreams, which is in bookshops now. And it's sort of autobiographical.
That's interesting. I suppose it is, yes. I would agree with you.
You wrote it, Michael.
I never thought of it like that. But of course, it's coming out of your soul, essentially. So they're the poems.
There are bits in it, and we'll get to it later on, but there are very personal, intimate details in the poems in here.
There are. I know there's one there about Terry and his polio and that, which was very personal. I think he was a little worried about it. But... yes, and now that you say it that way, I of course it is.
It is, yeah.
From childhood right through.
Right through. What sort of child were you?
An aunt said that I was a very sunny child. I was a happy child, interested in music, and I did the usual things in those days with altar serving and singing in the choir. And so we had a very full life as children. It was a great place to grow up. You just remember the sunny days. I can remember there wasn't much traffic in those days, and the tar melting on the roads, and you'd get it all over your sandals, and we used to keep butter paper in a press so that you'd try and take the tar off the sandals.
And then did you ever get the magnifying glass and try and set something alight?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did indeed. Yeah, and getting tadpoles in jam jars and putting holes
You're
in.
You're not allowed to do that anymore.
Are you not allowed?
No, it's not allowed. Health and safety. I think it's conservation of the frog population. Yeah. Now, in your biography, you remember you went on the Late Late Show and you told about your sexual abuse and all that, and you addressed that in one of the poems here.
Yeah.
I'm wondering did that change it? Happened at an age. Around seven, was it?
Yes, around 7 years.
Because you're saying you were a happy-go-lucky, sunny disposition and all that.
Yes.
Did that make you a different Michael Murphy? Of course it did, but...
There's something I'd say about that. What I'd say is the world is always new to a child. A child is learning all the time. For instance, to open a door, you have to learn to twist the handle, for example, things like that. All these experiences that happened to me like, I mean, I see it in terms of childhood. There was a council yard near us, and I'd be down there playing among the various machinery and all the rest of it. And they used to have these wonderful caravans. Obviously, the guys lived in those. So I was in there one day playing, and the next thing, one of the guys said, you know, come on, pretend that this is a lollipop. And
all right, okay,
that
right,
sort of
yes,
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I left, he stood on the top step and he clenched his fist and he said, this is a secret, now you don't tell anyone. Mm. And I think that had more effect on me.
It was the secret, keeping
the
secret.
It was keeping the secret, yes. The terror of that, because I didn't know what was wrong, or, you know,
yeah.
But obviously something wrong had happened, you know. So I kept that secret. I never spoke about it. And when I...
But you got on with your life.
Oh, I got on with my life.
Yes.
I did, yeah.
With your sunny disposition.
You and so, yes, yeah. you get on with it. Yeah. Like, I mean, new experiences happen to children all the time. That was just another one, you know.
Yeah.
So I was lucky it didn't really distress me too much, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So then, out of your sort of single figures and into your teen years, and I suppose in your teen years you begin to realise who you are, where you fit in the
as
world.
A person, yes.
And who did you think you were?
I was away in Newbridge at that stage, in boarding school. I went away at 12 years of age. And who was there in my time? Christy Moore.
Right.
Donal Lunny.
Ah.
I was in the same year as Dermot Wells, the horse trainer.
Yes.
You know, so I loved Kildare, actually, right? So I did, yeah. So it was a happy time. I got to learn to play the organ, studied art. There was a wonderful art teacher there, a guy called Father Henry Flanagan. So I was very lucky in Newbridge. Not so lucky in that I couldn't play rugby. I was absolutely amazed how people actually understood how to. Nobody had ever told me the rules.
Yeah.
So I can remember being on the pitch and it's snowing and the ball came towards me and one of the priests, for F's sake, Murphy, will you run? But where do you run to?
Yes.
Nobody told me, you know? So
pass it back, kick
pass
it forward.
It back, yeah,
kick it
pass
forward.
It back.
Yeah,
yeah. Pass it back. I learned soon enough.
Like, yeah. Castlebar to Newbridge, it's a long way away from home at the age of 12.
It is a long way from home. Well, the Dominicans had been a tradition in the family. My granduncle my granduncles were in Newbridge and my uncles were in Newbridge. So that's why we went.
How often did you get home?
Just for the holidays.
That's
it? Christmas and Easter. Yeah, that was it. And summer, yeah.
So September 1st then, you'd be there till...
You'd be there till...
The 20th of December.
September, that's it, yeah. So it was a long time.
And were there visits?
Maybe one a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, our little girl has gone into secondary school. I can't imagine not seeing her for...
That length of time. Well, there were four others at home, so...
Yeah.
And my two other brothers came
lots
eventually.
Lots to do, lots
yeah.
to do. And music was in it. We played Winifred Atwell already, and let's play a bit of this.
On a day like today, we pass the time away, writing love.
Pat Boone.
The beautiful voice of Pat Boone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. That is summer days, the time of the carnival in Castlebar, when the carnival would come to town. That would be playing on the loudspeaker.
Yeah.
That's what I associated
with
that. On the tannoy.
Yeah.
On the tannoy. And it used to be in the old military barracks in Castlebar. That's where they had the carnival. So you'd be walking up this huge avenue and you'd hear this on the tannoy. And so happy times.
I'm there. You brought me back with Pat Boone and the carnival.
Yeah.
On the telly, what were you watching? Can you remember getting the first telly?
I can remember the original Fugitive was a Richard Kimball.
Yes.
I remember watching that. That would be about mid-60s. Then the Monkees were later on, maybe about 66 or something like that.
Mm.
Hawaii 5-0, Book 'em Down.
Yeah, it ran from 1968 to 1980.
Right.
Jack Lord.
That's exactly
right. He portrayed
right, yeah.
Steve McGarrett.
That's it. Yeah,
and there's well that done. Brilliant scene in the opening animation or credits or whatever, where he did the spin He was on the balcony, he did a spin, didn't
he? Yes.
To camera.
Yeah. They were wonderful. They were innocent days. They were wonderful days. Yeah. You know, great to grow up to those.
Yeah. Hawaii 5-0.
Yeah, series. Yeah.
This is... your sounds are brilliant. I don't know, there's something about them. They all fit together and there's lovely textures to them. This one, tell me about the Black Lagoon.
Ah. Now, I can't... remember being allowed to go to films, but we did go to films. I can remember Errol Flynn and these swashbuckling things. The Creature from the Black Lagoon was a film that absolutely terrified me. I saw it in the Fourpenny Rush, you know, this creature coming out, about to enter a room where the heroine was and all that sort of thing. And it was a big scaly thing, rather like an alligator. So I can remember being absolutely terrified.
Science couldn't explain it, but there it was, alive in the deep, deep waters of the Amazon. A throwback to a creature that had existed 100 million years ago, immensely strong and destructive. A woman's beauty, the bait that brought it out of its lair. In this most terrifying of the science fiction adventures.
The Black Lagoon.
And there was a place near the... There was an enormous mental hospital in Castlebar. And near that, there were hills and hollows in a field. And we always refer to it as the Black Lagoon.
The Black Lagoon, you know, right. Yeah. So Newbridge College then. and you came out of Newbridge College. And where did you go after that?
I was in the Dominicans for a while.
Yeah. And you were in the Dominicans.
Yeah, I was going to become a Dominican.
I was there for a while.
I was there, yeah. I did about 3 years. And then I went to UCD.
Why did you decide it wasn't for you?
The discipline was far too rigorous. I can remember, again, I had a good voice in those days. I was in the operas in Newbridge and all the rest of it. And I can remember reading in the refectory, the silence when you ate in the Dominicans at the time. And I made a mistake. I can remember it still. The word was ducats. And I referred to them as ducats. It was money at the time. Right. So what you did was at the end of that, you had to walk right up in front of everybody, lay prostrate on the ground, wait for the prior to actually touch you briefly and forgive you for having made that mistake. Mm. And, you know, this was just too much. Right. And again, there would be a silence at night. If you were down the bathroom and you met somebody as you were washing at night or whatever, you know, say hello, but you'd get penance for that
breaking
silence and all of that sort of thing. Look, hey, there's more to life than stuffing a mushroom, you know.
Because there's a poem in the book, Celibate Men in Dresses.
Yes.
Which is quite scathing.
Right, yeah.
About clerics.
Yeah. Celibate men in dresses have captured God, I think is the opening line of it. Yeah. It is.
And you've written and you've talked about the fact that you're gay and you're married to Terry and that's all good. When did you realise you were gay?
Looking back, it was very early. I think sometime after that abuse, I think, really. But I didn't do anything about it till my late 20s, early 30s.
I'm just wondering, was going into a celibate lifestyle, was that, you know...
With hindsight, maybe it was something...
Because it was a safe environment
to be.
Yes,
and to protect myself from being so wrongly fixed inside. Again, with hindsight.
And of course, there'd be no pressure on you then to, you know, meet a girl, have a family, none of those things.
I'd say that was a percentage in there. But I think it was an idealistic move at the time. It was, certainly in those days, it would have been in the mid-60s, it was an expression of my idealism. I think so.
And seen as a badge of honour for your family.
Well, it's the heritage.
And everyone would have been saying, Michael's great, he's going into the Dominicans and we're all so proud. And
I don't know. I don't know what the parents thought of it, you know.
Right,
I'm sure my father thought it was a big mistake.
Yeah.
He never said anything, but I would think so, yeah.
What was your relationship like with your dad?
better relationship with my mother. It was he was very strict with me when I was a kid. I got a good few beatings.
Did
from
you?
Him. Yeah, and I don't think I ever forgave that. I can remember after one particularly bad beating, I went up to my bed, took my pajamas, and went. My grandmother lived next door, went next door and told her I was staying there from now on.
Yeah.
And she actually didn't send me back. With hindsight, maybe she should have.
And was she your dad's?
Yes, dad's mother.
Dad's mother, right.
Yeah. So she seemed to understand, and I stayed there from then on, yeah.
Yeah. That's a terrible thing, isn't it? Been beaten by your parent. I know what's happened. It happened. Yeah. It was a different time.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I was on a tricycle and there were petrol pumps 2-3 doors down. And they in those days, they had bottles of oil with silver foil on top.
Mm.
And I was weaving in and out on my tricycle and I clipped the oil and it spilled.
Accident. So,
an accident, okay, but I was terrified. I went up and I hid under a bed, and my father came home. I could hear him coming home in the evening, and he came up and he fished under the bed for me, brought me down, and gave me a terrible beating.
Right.
And that was that. He needn't have done that.
No.
Yeah.
No. Catherine says, I have all Michael's books. I treasure them. This new book is gorgeous. He is fearless and shows great courage, humour and empathy. I'm so delighted for him and he's just brilliant. And would you mind asking Michael, would he ever consider doing an audiobook reading? I miss his voice on the radio. He could read the alphabet and I'd be intrigued.
Oh, isn't that very kind?
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah, very supportive. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, I'd love to do an audiobook, particularly of the poetry at some
Yes,
stage.
That's what I was just... Yeah,
it'd be a good thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good idea.
Yeah. Dan Darren Digby, great memories. Thanks, says Joan and County Kenny. And remember hearing Winifred Atwell playing The Robin's Return.
That's another one. Well done, yeah.
We adored Winifred Atwell when we were young, says somebody else. Mike, you're going to stay with us. We have a quick commercial break to take and we'll talk a little bit more after that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551, ray@rte.ie. We're speaking to Michael Murphy. His new collected poems is called The Ministry of Dreams, and he's talking us through the soundtrack to his life as well. We've got you up to just the whole news reading thing. How did that come about? You said it already that you knew you had a good voice.
Yes. Well, I won a scholarship to France where I studied psychoanalysis for the first time. And then I came back to Ireland, and there wasn't much call for psychoanalysts at the early 70s in Ireland. And saw an advertisement in the paper. They were looking for people to work in continuity and in the newsroom in RTE. So I joined at that time, and Pat Kenny was in my group, the two of us. So we were trained for about 6 months, and we went on. That program was, the next program is. And then they advertised for newscasters. I had to apply all over again, and I got the job in the newsroom. So that's how I got in there.
And you met Terry, because you're also a producer, were you?
I did about 10 years as senior producer-director in
RTE. And that's how you met your husband, Terry?
Yeah, I was working, I had a series called Access Community Television, and my researcher was Margaret Martin. She worked with Gay, but she also worked with me on that series. And we went up to the Rutland Centre to do a programme. It was an outside broadcast unit. We did 3 12-hour days. And Terry was there. Since you couldn't obviously film the clients, all the people who worked there sat in as a group therapy session. Right. And Terry was leading it. So I watched this guy on television for three days. And television is like an X-ray. If you turn down the sound, particularly when a politician is on, you can really see into their soul. So I saw into the soul of this guy and I said, that's a good guy. So afterwards, we had a little meal together, everybody who took part in the programme, and I made sure I was sitting beside him. So that's...
And how long are you together?
35 years. Yeah. So it's a good record. Yeah.
And you got married after the legislation was changed.
Came through, yes.
So maybe before we get to the dreams, you might read the final verse or stanza of that, a poem for Terry. It's on page 73 there, if you don't mind.
On that laughing summer's day. On that laughing summer's day, the wind was cheering and the leaves on the trees were waving as we processed towards our future through O'Connell Street. Side by side, we laid our bouquet of roses out at the GPO. Acknowledge those who gave their lives so we could be cherished equally. proclaimed ourselves free, and free to become better together than either of us could choose to achieve on our own. And we withdrew relevance from those who disapproved of our new and mutual Republic of Love.
I love that line, withdrew relevance.
That's what you have to do.
That's cutting, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah, it is.
You're not relevant anymore. Go away.
Go away. Forget about them.
Yeah. Right, thanks for that. So we said you were going to analyse a couple of, and we got loads in. We only have time for two.
Right.
So I'll do this one first. Hi, Michael Ray. I had a really upsetting dream that a doctor told me I needed to have my leg amputated. Any thoughts on what this means?
Well, if your leg was going to be amputated, you wouldn't have a leg to stand on.
I kid you not.
That's it. That's literally it. You ask yourself, what is the metaphor in this dream? So that's what it is. But it refers to her or his everyday life. What is going on at the moment where you feel you don't have a leg to stand on? And it might mean you have to prepare a reply or some response to that situation. That's why you had the dream. It's to alert you to what's coming on in the future. Yeah.
So deal with that, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I had the most unusual dream last week. Field of rabbits everywhere. I wasn't watching or reading anything to do with rabbits that day, night. I don't have a pet rabbit, so I'm totally mystified why I had a dream with rabbits.
That's a wonderful dream. That is fantastic. What do rabbits do?
A lot of things.
So that's why he or she had the dream about rabbits. There's something to do with sex in there.
Right.
You know,
breeding like rabbits.
Breeding like rabbits. Yeah. It's actually in the language, you know, breed like rabbits. Yeah. So that's essentially what the dream is about. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now, I can see that person at home blushing.
Well, at least they're not on television. So,
right, yes.
The whole country doesn't know who they are.
So you have to ask yourself what's going on in your subconscious. Great.
Freud would say there's always something to do with sex in every single dream, but that's what it is,
I met Michael at a communications course. He gave me good advice. That's Sheila, and one of my favourite news readers, such a soothing voice. A gentleman, says Esther.
Oh, nice.
It's been great being in your company for the last half hour or so.
Thanks,
Michael, thank you very much. And The Ministry of Dreams is collected poems by Michael Murphy, which is in bookshops now.
And we have a show with Sienna Campbell of this parish on Wednesday evening next in Tralee at the Rose Hotel. So we'll be reading some poems.
So say that again, next Wednesday evening.
Next Wednesday evening in the Rose Hotel Tralee, Sienna Campbell and myself will be reading poems from this. A literary evening.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you very much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Now we have Minnie, age 4. How are you doing, Minnie?
Good.
Maxie, age 6. How are you doing, Maxie?
Hello.
And we have Trina, unspecified age. Hi, Trina. And
that's a hint of what we're talking about, by the way.
All three of them have seen Frozen 2, and they're going to preview it for us because it's in cinemas as in from today. But first, behind you, Minnie, Maxie and Trina, we have Sive. How are you doing, Sive?
Hello.
And Sive came in with her ukulele, and she's going to sing us a couple of songs before we leave you today at 4:30. First up is Do It All The Time, Sive, and then we'll have a quick chat after that, when you're ready.
I'm scared, to be honest, 'cause I don't know what you'll say. I don't know what I think you'll think, but I'll make something up anyway. I'm scared to be weak, and just the other day I read a pamphlet about mental health, but I thought it was meant for someone else. I went to a physiotherapist and I marked my pain as a 5. I don't know why I lied. It was probably more like a 9. I do it all the time, do it all the time. I don't know why I do it all the time. I do it all the time, do it all the time. I don't know why, I don't know. I do it all the time. I do it all the time. There's a pattern, it's a line. ends. It's a complex work of art that bends and twists. It's a tightrope, but it will not let me fall. Open my guts up and bare my nerves so we can see which way the impulse runs. I went to the doctor. She asked me how I felt. I said, I'm fine. How do you do? I didn't know why I lied, but I went home feeling confused. I do it all the time, do it all the time. I don't know why I do it all the time. I do it all the time, do it all the time. I don't know why, I don't know why. Did I say I want to change?
That's Sive, and Sive is playing in the Monastereven Community Centre tomorrow night.
Yes.
And somebody has been on from there, Anne Clare. Lovely to hear your music, guests. We are delighted to have Sive play here as part of our culture night. Oh, yeah, sorry, that's 3 years ago. Such a talented artist and all around gorgeous person. Wishing her every success in her career. So tomorrow night it's Monastereven Community Centre, and you're going to stay with us and sing us another song before we go.
Yes.
Frozen doesn't mean anything to you.
I mean, I know Let It Go.
That's about it though. You've never seen it. Let It Go. Minnie and Maxi and Trina have seen Frozen, as in the first one, and Frozen 2.
Exactly.
Which is the important thing. That's why you're here today, to talk to us about Frozen 2. Thanks for wearing your Christmas outfits. That's a lovely dress and a lovely jumper.
Yeah. Because we are going to Santa's house.
Oh, you're going to Santa's house today?
Yeah.
What are you going to say to him?
After this.
Okay, busy day.
Very busy.
What are you going to say to him? Are you going to tell him what you want from him?
Yeah.
What are you asking for, Max?
I'm going to ask for some Lego.
Yeah, right.
Max, he's got a cough and he's trying. You can cough now. Go on. Okay. Get it all out.
And Minnie, what are you going to ask Santa for?
Actually, I forgot.
You forgot? Okay.
I thought you told me you have an Anna doll.
Oh, yeah.
And what was the other doll you wanted to get?
Well, that's for next Christmas.
Oh, that's for next Christmas. Right, okay. You're planning ahead.
Absolutely.
Do you know, can I suggest, Minnie, do you know why people make lists? So they don't forget. So when you remember, get your mom or Maxie or maybe you to write it down. So then you won't forget it. How about that? Good idea, bad idea. Anyway, Frozen 2.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, did you see Frozen 1?
Not in the cinema, but we did see it at home in one day.
Yes. And what did you think of Frozen 1?
It was good, but not like Frozen 2.
Ah.
Yeah.
So, Minnie, do you think Frozen 2 is better than Frozen 1?
Yes.
Yes. Does it have any songs that are as good as Let It Go?
Yes.
It does. It does. Right. So, Mum Trina, probably the most anticipated animated movie in the history of animated movies is Frozen 2.
You see, the first one came out 7 years ago before I had any babies.
Children, yeah.
And it kind of passed me by in the same way. So I was like, yeah, I kind of know about it. And then I have Maxie, and then I have Minnie a year later. And everywhere we go, let it go. I'm like, would you, has it not gone yet? You know, it was just everywhere.
Yes.
The songs were so catchy. There were little Elsas going around everywhere in their little dresses. And we didn't see that one in the cinema, like Max, or the simina, as Maxie likes to say.
I love that. I love that, Maxie.
But
the simina. The simina.
But so I
and
was.
And if you get injured at the simina, you have to go to the hospital.
The hospital. But so then, so yeah, the first one kind of, it was on in different places, and it was on, we saw it at home one rainy evening. We downloaded it or something. And with Frozen 2, though, they are at the age now where they go, first of all, going to see it in the cinema is just a spectacle because the soundtrack is amazing. It's actually so beautifully shot. It's just, you know, it's like there's raindrops. And at one stage, you actually think they're nearly, it's a microphone, Minnie. But it is, it has a little bit of something for everyone. I know that's a cliche, but it kind of does because there's great messages in it. There's things like, you know, sisters, being kind, like Elsa and Anna. I can barely say Anna. I have a sister called Anna, so I find it difficult to say Anna.
Elsa has this gift or affliction that everything she touches turns into
ice.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in the first one, we saw how that didn't work out well, and she sort of ran up a mountain and took herself away from the real world.
Yeah.
Then she came back and she was friendly with her sister. Yeah. You know, they sort of didn't live happily ever after, but sort of happily ever after. Yes.
But that's kind of real life. Do you sometimes fight with your sister?
Yeah.
Yes, sometimes.
So, Minnie, can I ask you, do they all live happily ever after at the end of Frozen 2? Yes, yes.
Do you want to talk?
She's nodding. She's nodding. Yes, yes, yeah.
But can I just give you a hint?
Yes.
You're going to hear this nonstop all the time. Will we sing the bit that we know? It's like an earworm. It's just going to go in. You're going to hear it everywhere. People that don't have children will be like, what
is that?
Is that?
That's, yes.
You know, everyone is talking about. So it is great because Anna and Elsa are great role models. And so is Kristoff, the kind of main guy in it. You know, it just shows them, you know, going through difficulties, you know, coming out the other end. You know,
it's,
there's a character, Olaf. In it. Did we like Olaf?
Yeah.
He's the snowman.
Blankie.
Oh, she got an
Here's a question for you. Do you want to build a snowman? See, Sai doesn't get any of the in-jokes. See, there, we
know. I'm going to make a snowman at my birthday.
You're what? You're going to build a snowman at your birthday?
Yeah.
When is your birthday?
At Christmas.
Oh, that's your lucky, yes.
That was my Christmas present 4 years ago, yes?
Can I tell you what the favourite part
was? Yes, of course you can, yes.
So, my favourite part was the little lizard, like who did this.
Yes.
You may not see it from here, but
No, because it's radio. Well, it worked out, but if it was on television, they'd see it.
And
he's in it constantly, is he?
Yeah.
The little lizard.
Yeah.
Is he a lizard or an iguana? Is he, what is he?
Ooh. He's a fire lizard.
Oh, he's a fire lizard, is he? Right.
The fire
lizard, right, okay. And who is the funniest in it?
Well, Olaf.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Does his head fall off again?
Yeah.
One
time he pushed his carrot nose onto the back of his head.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what about Hans? Is he a reindeer, Hans?
Hans and Sven, which we find very hard to pronounce as well. You can say it, can't you?
I remember he talked like Kristoff.
Oh, Kristoff. You liked Kristoff, didn't you?
Remember when he talked like him?
He did, and that was very funny.
I read
an
observation today, because it's only getting 3 stars, but somebody
said
that a lot of the reviewers are middle-aged men.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
as a result, so they don't get it.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so what would you give it out of 5? How many stars would you
give
it?
I would probably give it 4 because, like I said, there's, you know, it has everything that you want in a kind of Disney movie.
Maxie, how many stars would you give it out of 5?
5.
5. Minnie, how many stars would you give?
10
out of 5. 10 out of 5, ladies and gentlemen. You can't get better than that. So you're 4, Minnie, and you're 6, and you're going off to see Santa.
Yeah.
Right. Will you tell him that I've been a good boy? Just so just to make sure I'm on his good list. Will you tell him that? Ray Darcy has been a good boy. Thank you very much. Will you do that for me?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Mummy being a bad girl.
Oh, she's on the naughty list. Oh, there you go.
Thank you, Millie, dumping me in it there.
She's been saying bad words all day.
Now, Trina. Maybe don't tell Santa that.
Alcohol, I think that's the problem.
There you go. I tell you what, we should have you in more often.
She drinks so much alcohol.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Now, I tell you what, Trina, to save your blushes, highly recommended from Minnie, Maxie and Trina, Frozen 2, which is in cinemas today. We're back to the Sive.
She knows drink alcohol until she wants to go to bed.
Right, okay.
I would like now to you say better, that I do not drink
you better, alcohol. You better go off to Santa. He's waiting for you. So thank you very much. Go on, off you go.
Okay,
thank you very much. Thank you. See you, Minnie.
Bye,
see you, Maxie. Bye. Bye. See you, Trina. Thank you very much for that.
Bye.
Thank you. Sive, when you're ready.
Okay.
What are you going to sing for us?
It's a new song called Storybook Moon. World premiere, you know.
Great.
I won't try to wake you up.
That was lovely. Storybook Moon.
Thanks for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, world exclusive.
Yeah.
And Sive is in Monastrevin Community Centre tomorrow night.
Yes, with Charlie McGettigan.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great. Enjoy that.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. That's it from us. We're on the telly tomorrow night. We're back on the radio on Monday at 3 o'clock. And Philip Boucher-Hayes is on the way. Have a great weekend.